Today is May 30th, 2024. We have the pleasure of talking this morning with Mary Shields. Karen Brewster is doing the recording, and I'm Bill Schneider. So thanks for taking the time to do this, Mary.
Oh, I'm glad for the opportunity.
Let's begin by having you talk a little bit about what mushing has meant for you.
Well, I've been mushing for 45 years or so. It's my whole focus. I love it because it gets me out in nature. It gets me to spend quality time with my dogs. And in some years, I have wonderful companions to go with me, namely the Colonel Bill Schneider is one of them. And I've gotten to see some wonderful places in Alaska that you can't get to any other way. And when you use your dogs for really transportation, it's a whole different feeling than if you just race with them or just have them for pets. The dogs like to have a job to work for you, and it's wonderful to have dogs that'll get you home safely all the time. We don't go fast, but we always get there. I like to think this is my last winter, was my last winter mushing. I live on a hill, and when I take off, I break with my right leg, and I wore out the ankle bones. And now I'm in a wheelchair, but I would do it all over again if I had to. I loved it. I went almost every day, and I really miss it a lot now, but I've had more of my share of time out on the trail, and I'm grateful for it. I like to think of if I were out on the trail taking a break, I'd just talk to my dogs and get them to settle down and be quiet, have some hot tea out of the thermos, give the dogs a snack. And then I just think I've learned so much on the trail. I wish I could pass it on to other people so they didn't have to learn all over again just how lucky we are to get an opportunity to have wild country to travel in with dogs without having to cut fences like people in Europe have to do. They carry shears with them so they can go through fences and put the barbed wire back together. Alaska is so big it still has miles and miles and miles of trail that you can use. If I'm on native land, which is private land, I try to ask if I have permission to use it, and I've never been turned down. They share the land with us, which is wonderful. And then I stop over on the trail and take tea breaks along the way and talk to my dogs and just thank them for taking me on the trips. And I tell them that this is the best part of my life is being out on the trail. I love to see the weather change. Now with climate change, it's much warmer. Usually March was worth a while all the whole month, and now it breaks up before the month is over. When you do the same thing every March of the year for that many years, you see the difference in the climate. And it worries me, but I try to talk to children because I think they're the salvation that's going to change things. My generation hasn't really done much. It's up to them. They have to live with it, so hopefully they can find some solutions. I talk to the dogs and point out why we're stopping for a campsite and what we're looking for in a good campsite. The most important thing is to have good firewood. In the interior of Alaska is the land of wildfires because it's a very dry climate. So we try to camp with a close vicinity to a wildfire so you can get a whole armful of firewood without having to snowshoe all over the country. It's just getting late and it's starting to get dark, and we don't see any rivers that have spruce forests on or wildfires. We just pick up snags along the trail that are easy to reach and lash them on the top of the sled so you don't have to hunt for firewood when you make camp. And I'd like to have a place where if the wind picks up, there's shelter in the trees for the dogs and for the tent and for the people. And I take a stakeout chain, which is just a piece of airline cable with short chains for each dog. And I like to pick a place where there's enough sturdy trees where I can tie the chains parallel the trail. So I can just tie the dogs off the trail and I don't have to put snowshoes on to feed them. And usually let them run loose when we first make camp so they can loosen up their muscles. They've been using the same muscles all day long, pulling the sled. And if they loose, they romp around and loosen up, and then they sleep better. Just 5 or 10 minutes is all they need. And then I put the stakeout chain and call them over and tie them up. And I finally made little beds for them so they would be insulated from the cold coming up from the snow. I took a piece of insulite, like foam pad that you used to use for sleeping on, and cut it into squares about 3 by 3 feet. And then the dogs would chew on those, so I put those in those poly bags that the dog food stores use and sewed them so they were tight. And that kept them from chewing on the foam pad. And then I put one down for each one. The lead dog always got the chain right by the tree. They like being underneath the trees. And then I walk them over and tie them up and put the pads down. And then I'd start making the dog food. Of course, the water is the most important thing. That's another good quality. If you can camp where there's some overflow, then you don't have to melt snow to make water. But the best place is to camp near hot springs. And then you can get hot water, running water. And then if you have frozen meat, you can thaw it out in a pan in the hot tub. Well, in the hot tub. Some, like big windy hot springs, had little tubs that people could get in. The next day you had to clean the calcium off the rocks. And then the rocks would heat up. And you could sit in them like a bathtub, and you could float the frozen dinner that you were going to eat around in and thaw it out. John, my former husband, was tall, and he would sit with his feet out of the one end and his head out the other of the tub. It was kind of funny. And then to make water, if I didn't have a hot springs or overflow, I made a cooker. Most people use methanol alcohol. I can't stand the smell of that stuff when it burns. So I took the little cans of Sterno out of it, and I used the outer pan, which was just a steam table pan, 12 by 13 inches, and I had Holiday Park drill great big holes in the sides of it to draw air through it. And then I make the fire in that pan, and then put a 5-gallon metal bucket with the snow down in the flames, and I'd pick the bucket up to add more firewood. And I would race with people that were using the alcohol, and well, the people I went with, sometimes I would be faster, sometimes they'd be faster. But I'd fill the bucket up with snow, melt it down, and when I got about a half a bucket of water, I just keep adding the snow to the water. And then I would have plenty of hot water. I'd add fat to the bucket, melt the fat, and add dry dog food, let it soak up, and then let it soak for 20 minutes or so, so the water would be absorbed in the dog food, so if they tipped their bowl over, they wouldn't lose all the water. And then I'd put the pans down for each dog, and I'd always make a couple of extra pans that I would let freeze up. And then in the morning I'd crack it open and give them a chunk of frozen food, they like chewing on the frozen food better than eating the dog food separate and the water separate. And I could carry leftovers on the sled for snacks during the day. Dehydration is the biggest problem the dogs have, or people also. I don't drink coffee out on the trail because coffee dehydrates you more. But I'll take frozen orange juice and put hot water in the thermos and make hot orange juice, and that would revive you from dehydration, just like the dogs. And then once the dog food's set up, I feed the lead dog first, they're the boss, and go down the line. I don't take a pan for every dog because they're heavy and I don't need it. I just take two pans and trade off who gets to eat out of the pan at what time. And then when they're all satisfied, well, before that, I forgot that. While the dog food's soaking up, we put up the tent so it's ready to go into when the dogs are fed. And also the very first things, once you find a place to put the stakeout chain, we snowshoe a flat platform for the tent. We have to be careful not to let the dogs run over it and make holes in it, because then when you're in the tent, you'll have holes that stuff will disappear in. But just snowshoe the platform, let the dogs run, start the fire, get the water melting, snow melting, and then put up the tent, and then put all the junk in the tent. I always put the sled right along the side of the tent. As I get older, it's harder and harder to get up, and I can grab onto the brushbow of the sled out the front door of the tent and help pull myself up. And then make a pile of firewood inside the tent so we don't have to go in and out all the time and let the heat out. I use a 8x8 Arctic oven double wall tent that saves on how much firewood you need. And it has a window in the door so you can look out and see what's going on without having to open up the door. I got it at Alaska Tent and Tarp. They make them right there. And it took longer to pick out the fabric for the pockets in the tent than it did for the tent itself. And I picked out sunflowers because if you were in a storm, it would make you feel warmer. And there's a cargo net hanging in the middle of the tent. I lent the tent to some people, and they, to thank me, they put the cargo net in it. And that's great. It's above your head. You can put your insoles and your mittens and your boots up there to dry out. And then you're not having to roll over them or find out where they are. You can see them. The same people, I think, accidentally burned a hole in the tent behind the stove. The stove goes right in the middle, so it heats up both sides of the tent. And then they were so apologetic for melting the snow, but it came in handy. You could pour water into the hole in the tent without having to open the door, so I didn't mind that they made a hole. And then another thing, when I travel by myself, I just take a small wall tent, 5x7, and to keep the doors tight, it has a zipper in it, but I have shop cord on either door tied off to the trees on the corner. So if I want the tent open, it'll keep the tent open, but not won't get on completely opened up. It gives a little tension on it and keeps it tight, but I don't have to zip it up. My fear is if I ever broke the zipper and it wouldn't close, then I would have a hard time keeping it warm. And we first got a military stove from the Army Surplus store in town, and we had Holiday Parks cut it off and make it just the width of the sled. And it's a nice little stove. I don't use that space of the stove empty. I put the dog food bowls and maybe the stakeout chain in the stove Then I notice where it is when I stop to make camp. While I'm traveling on the trail, I'm thinking about how wonderful it is to be there, but I'm also thinking of exactly what I'm going to do when I'm stopping to make camp, so I am efficient. I don't have to sit down and say, oh, what should I do next? I know where things are, and I preach more than I practice my preaching, I must say, because I'm not a person that puts things back in the same place. But I try to do that so I know where things are. The times I've been on the long distance races, the Iditarod or the Yukon Quest, I tried to be more efficient that way of knowing exactly what I would do when I stopped to take a rest stop. Because then it's really important that you're not wasting time. I remember coming up on a fellow that was not very organized, worse than I was. He was hungry, and he made his dinner on a stove, and he ate out of a dog pan because he couldn't find his cook kit. It used to be much more relaxed than it is today. I'm diverging, but I do that. On the Iditarod, when I went in 1974, Red Olson had a birthday, and we were all in, a bunch of us were in Galena, and we bought a bunch of ice cream, and we went out of town a ways, and I thought it was five or six teams stopped, and we all enjoyed having ice cream. Nobody does things like that anymore, I don't think. There's so much money involved, people have to place higher to make back what they've spent or try to. Anyway, I like the camping a lot better than the racing. I just wanted to see how my dogs could do compared to the little race dogs. They're big dogs. Mine are probably 85 on the average. And I have mostly male dogs. The few females I've had have all made good lead dogs. And I like to ask people what gender they think make the best lead dogs. And then, of course, I tell them that females are the better because if you get lost, they'll stop and ask for directions, or the males won't do that. That's just my dog mushing joke. But I like the males better. They don't come into heat, and you can use them in your team all of winter long. So let's pretend I'm out on the trail. We stop to make camp. I'm talking to the dogs, telling them what I'm looking for in this last camp, telling them how I'm going to miss it in the future, but I'm lucky to have done it as long as I've had. I couldn't have done it without the best dogs in the world, and we all think our own dogs are the best dogs. But I know mine are very good dogs. I've gotten myself in some pinches, but luckily the dogs have always gotten me out of them. I dropped one dog in one Yukon Quest, but otherwise all my dogs have made it to the finish line. And the one I dropped is one I bought just before the race, because I needed eight dogs, and I only had six. But next March, when I can't go mushing, I'll probably be in a wheelchair because my leg has to be amputated. I remember these wonderful days when I've been on the trail, just to learn about the different interior landscapes. When you're going so slow as my team goes, you know when you're going up a hill, you're up on the top of the pass, and when you're down in another watershed. And you really know where you are. Now when I go on an airplane to Anchorage, I can look out the window and I can see Denali Park, and I can tell where it is all the way to the Toklak campground, because there's a stand of spruce on it. And then once we get south of that, I'm not sure on the 4-acre river, because I haven't traveled that much on the land. But on the from Fairbanks to Denali Park and to Wonder Lake, and to Wonder Lake, I can, to Toklat River, I can tell. Anyway, it's fun to know what it's like down on the ground when you're up in an airplane. I wish I could take all of the visitors that come to Alaska on my sled so they could feel what it's like to be out on the trail. It's smooth where the trail is good, and it's bumpy where you hit moguls that snow machines have left. Or if you're breaking trail on snowshoes, you walk in front of the sled, but behind your wheel dogs, and there's real pressure to keep going so the sled doesn't knock you over. We tie a pole onto the sled, either to the right or the left. We call them either a G-pole or a haul pole. And then when you're on snowshoes, you can steer the sled better with that pole sticking out than you can if you're trying to do it by bending back and hanging onto the brush pole. I guess I feel bad that more people aren't traveling with dogs. I understand that it's kind of taken a slump in mushers out there. Now snow machines are on the trail more than dog mushers. But people knew how wonderful it was and how wonderful it is to travel more quietly than a snow machine. You don't see a lot of wildlife, but every now and then you see something. And it's just nice to hear the little snaps on the dogs' collars jingling and the dogs panting. I sing to my dogs when I'm on the trail. I'm not a good singer, but I put their names in the songs. And when the dogs hear their names, they wag their tail and look back over their shoulders. And I kind of have fun doing that. Would you like to hear one of my songs?
Sure.
Okay. Let's see. I do it to Norwegian Wood that the Beatles sang. And I get it mixed up, but I'll try. Once I had a team, or should I say, they once had me. We played in the snow when we would go. Then it would snow. I nearly went broke buying dog food. I clearly remember I had to feed them good food from May to September. Then one snowy day we went out to play and we would stay. It just goes on and on like that. It doesn't make sense. But when
sense.
The dogs hear the names, I also do. I had a dog and the name was Blue. I had a dog and the name was Blue. Come on, Schnitzel, you good dog, you. And when they'd hear their names, they would perk up a little bit. It kept me occupied, and they didn't seem to mind me singing to them. Well, you should try stepping on my sled and see what it feels like. Maybe we can make it bounce down the trail and you can feel that. This is my real sled that I took on the I took this sled on the trip across the Bering Strait over to Russia. And if you look at this sled, it has a toboggan bottom that's a few inches up above the snow. Then if you have a good trail, it's not dragging. But if you have to go in deep snow, that toboggan bottom floats the sled so the runners don't sink down in. Otherwise, it would be very hard for the dogs to pull it. But I try to take advantage of any trail that's there to make it easier for the dogs. And if I have to break the trail up in front, we really slow down. But if I can find any little bit of the trail, on the Iditarod, when I left Kaltag, it was in a blizzard, and there were a couple of other mushers with me. I was the first one that pulled out, and at one point I took a wrong turn. I went to the left where the main trail went to the right, but it was hard to see it because it was covered with the new snow. But after I broke trail for a little while, I could feel that there was no trail underneath me, so I had the dogs stop, and instead of wasting energy floundering back and forth looking for a trail, I just went 90 degrees to my right where I think the trail was. And then when I got on the trail, then I continued on. after I finished the Iditarod, I came back from Galena. No, this was before Galena. No, after Galena. Anyways, when I came back, when I hit that part in the trail was perfectly obvious, but the dogs wanted to go exactly the way we had gone, and they turned off on the bare inkling of the old trail and made that dog leg until we got back to the trail. I thought it was funny they remembered the trail so clearly, and they chose to go on that rather than the trail that was broken out. Dogs will be dogs, and that's what they did. But they always get me back on the trail. Even though I think I know where I'm going, I trust the dogs better than myself. They're not to be taken lightly. They're much more tuned in than we are. But I'm proud to get to travel with them. Well, I better be quiet and get going, get to the next campsite. Hope you get out on the trail. Bye-bye.
So, Mary, how do you know where you are when you're out in the country?
Well, ever since I was in grade school, I had a good sense of direction. We'd walk to school, and I'd always know where the sun was. Now I think I always know where I am, and I can make any map fit where I am. It doesn't always work out, but so far it has. And shadows are very dominant here in the north. When the winter time, when the sun is low, the shadows are quite extensive. And I love watching that with the dogs. They go right from their feet way out off the sled. And I know there's a declination of 21 degrees, so my compass may say north, but true north is really 21 degrees to the right. So I have to figure that out. And I just trust the compass and the dogs. If there's any old trail left, the dogs feel it with their feet, even when I can't see it. That's why a good lead dog is worth their weight in gold, because they can feel the trail. Some people say dogs that have pink spots on their tongues make good lead dogs, but I don't see that that has anything to do with being a good lead dog. But some people really believe that. And then I just am prepared, if I make a mistake, to cut the rations in half so we don't run out of food if we have to backtrack. The dogs know when you've made a mistake. They know. So you try not to ever do that. So I just use the map and compass and my innate sense of direction, looking at the shadows.
Are there any places where it's particularly tricky here in the interior?
Well, on races and things where I've traveled extensive, close to towns is where you have the most trouble, because that's where people are just going out to check their traps or to get firewood. One year, Leslie Markham and I were going to Kotzebue to visit someone, and we took off from the Hall Road, and we went to Bettles and to Alcacket, and when we left Alcacket, there was a good trail going downriver, so we were quite jaunty about taking off, and we got a mile and a half and learned it was just a woodcutting trail, and then we had to put snowshoes on and go the rest of the way to Hughes, and we were pretty slow going, and we were stopping to have a cup of tea and just saying, we're never going to make it to Hughes tonight. And we heard a snow machine coming upriver with a light on, and we were never so happy to see someone come. And then he had broken trail halfway to Alcacket. And then when we left Alcacket, there was good trail down to Hooslea. And we just had good trail from there on. And when we left Hooslea, Catherine Atlett told us when we got to Old Woman Creek to whisper or the spirits would bother us. So we did whisper when we got there. And then we got to the airport in Shunyak, and it was getting time to make camp, so we camped right near the airport. In the morning, a little Inupiat lady found us and was so mad at us, not really mad, but why didn't we come knock on her door? We could have slept in her house. She brought us back for breakfast, and later on she sent us gloves she had knit, and she had cancer later in her life and moved to Fairbanks, and I got to know her there too, and she got a job up at the university in the kitchen, and she died of cancer, and her daughter made a soundtrack on a CD that they sent to everyone. So it was wonderful to know her.
Do you want to tell about the Minto Flats?
Yes, one time I was with Colonel Patagonia, as we like to call him fondly. Bill Schneider and I were out on a trip. We left Nenana, a good hard trail, and we got out of Minto Flats, which is a million of little lakes, and the trail forked, and we didn't know which way to go. I think I said, let's go to the right, and Bill wanted to go to the left, and he bowed to my feeling that I was right, and it wasn't the right. It took us way out the wrong way. So I think we cut over to the other trail and finally got on it. Is that how you remember it?
No, that's not how I remember it. How I remember it was, I didn't know where I was, but you looked around and you could tell by the mountains where you were. We didn't know where the specific trail was, but you weren't lost.
Yeah,
where I was lost.
You could see Murphy Dome to the east and the Parks Highway up on the south. And Mooseheart Mountain, you can see way to the west, but not on the ground, I don't think. And I've been in the hot springs at Tolovana before, and it was a commercial thing. And you could lay in the old tub on your back, and you could see the domes on Murphy Dome. Whoever put, I mean, it's where the hot tub was, they had to put it there, where the hot water was.
Yeah.
But we found that one time when we were lost. We had supplies shipped into New Minto and to Tolovana airstrip. And then when we got to New Minto, a fellow I met at the university that lived there, as soon as we came up onto the street, the first person I saw, I asked where this fellow had lived, and it happened to be his grandfather that I happened to run into. And he hopped on my sled and took me to his house. And then I asked him if there was any way over the ridge into the east side of that landscape. And he said they used to have a hunting trail that took straight off from a cabin on Big Minto Lake, and that would get you halfway up the mountain. No, it was a big hill, it wasn't a mountain. So when we took off, we went to Big Minto Lake, we found the little cabin. In the north, it's usually okay to use someone's cabin if you're respectful of it. You don't eat all the food up or leave it a mess. And we left it nice and neat, and we went on the trail where it went through the spruce. It hadn't grown in at all, but where you crossed any little drainage, it would have willows growing in it. You could get lost. And then we got halfway up the hillside, and there was a face carved in the tree. It wasn't a smiley face, it was a scary face. It had ears and a mouth and eyes. But we were up high enough we could snowshoe the rest of the way up to the top and go over and come down the trail into the west left fork of Cache Creek, where the cabin was. And then we made a base camp up on top later on, and then we could travel up there, up and over, and to see the country from up high in the future from that time. So it was really a neat trip to learn about that.
I was wondering about that, sort of what Bill was talking about, that when you're out there in the country, some of this country, it's flat and it all looks the same. And how do you navigate and use landmarks to help you find the way, especially if there isn't an existing trail? What do?
Just go slowly. Sometimes it's more efficient for the musher to mush snowshoe in front of the dogs and let them follow behind you so you can make camp. Sometimes you make camp, go out and come back, but then you're backtracking. But once it sets up overnight, you can just walk on it without snowshoes even.
Some of the people listening to this recording may want to know where they can read about your adventures out into the country.
Well, my very first book, Sled Dog Trails, talks about that. Because we'd come back from a dog sled trip and we'd be broke and we'd have to sell a dog sled. And then I would get letters from people asking questions about things. I'd write articles for Alaska Magazine, but I get questions from people, and I like to answer people when they write me, but I didn't like to answer so many letters, so I wrote Sled Dog Trails, where I tried to put all the information in one book. But people have written me and pointed out on the list of things to bring, I didn't list matches or toilet paper. So I had a second edition that changed it. Now it's in the 18th edition. Uh-huh. But, yeah.
And hopefully that'll be available to people.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you can buy it at the museum, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, I think for people who haven't been out in that country and are not familiar with Alaska, can't imagine how you can find your way around out there and get from place to place.
Well, the way we can use a way we can find our way is having a plan where we're sending out supplies ahead of time, and we could carry about 10 days worth of supplies at one time. Most of that's dog food. And then as the dogs eat every night, the load gets lighter and lighter. But we'd send it to a post office, call the post office and ask them to take the fat and put it up on top of the post office so dogs didn't get into it, and keep it safe till we got there. Frozen fish were a little bit of a problem. The post office frowns on sending frozen fish through the mail. And they'll take a guinea sack that weighs 70 pounds, but that's pretty hard for me to handle too. But we put at the most 3 bags, 40-pound bags of dog food, a bag of fat, and a bag of little boots for the dogs. And we pack the sled with the light stuff in the front, the caribou pads for sleeping pads, the sleeping bags. We found that taking 2 cheap Syntho bags that would trap heat between them was safer than 1 down bag, because if you ever did go through the through the ice and got it wet, it would take forever to dry out a big down bag. But those Syntho bags, you could put the tent up and get the stove going, and you could thaw it out in not too long of time.
What were those bags called? Syntho bags?
Oh, Syntho.
Oh, synthetic.
Yeah, synthetic bags, yeah. The down bags are definitely more comfortable and warm, but you could take your chances with it if you're not in a hurry. I finally worked with 1 down bag and 1 squared off Syntho bag that I put the down bag in. Mm-hmm. Then I had the warmth of the down bag, but I wasn't claustrophobic by being in 2 mummy bags. Here I am sitting on the sled thinking about how wonderful it is to be out here. I've learned a lot over the years. I've learned about the country, I've learned about my dogs, and I've learned about myself. I found that whenever I got myself in trouble, it wasn't the dog's fault. It was my lack of training them correctly. And I've learned that you have to think of the future. Think of the trail ahead of you. Think of the future and everything you do. And think of what the worst thing could be and be prepared for that in case it does happen. Then it most likely won't happen. Like, if you ran into a moose, what would you do? So I learned to yodel when I go around a blind corner. So if there's one, they hear me coming and they get out of the way. I learned if I take my mittens off to have lunch, when I put my hands back in them, my hands will be cold. So now I know to sit on top of my mittens so my body heat keeps them nice and warm. Then I can make lunch and put my mittens back on when it's time to go. And before I even leave on a trip, I cut the cheese up in little chunks so I don't have to try to do that with frozen cheese and cold hands. And if I'm going to have hamburger for dinner or moose burger, I'll sprinkle it out on a cookie sheet at home and cook it, put it in a Ziploc bag, and then all I have to do is warm it up in the tent. Things like that that make life a little more comfortable. I learned that bagels make wonderful candle holders. You got to be careful that they don't drip wax all over it. Well, they will drip wax all over it. But I buy candles at Christmas time when they go on sale, the tall, skinny kind, and then they fit right in the center of the bagel. And I just use one bagel over and over, and then just subtract it from my food source, but use it for a heat source. This last winter I've gone mushing, I started using a headlamp in the tent. It certainly makes it a brighter tent, but I don't like the cold feeling of the headlight. I really like the warmth of the candles. But it is dangerous if you've got the tent on fire. Then you'd really be careful. I mean, you'd really be sorry. So you have to be careful if you use candles. But there are candle lanterns that probably other people figure out how to use them better than I do. I try with them and they always drip wax all over inside the tent. Maybe I just haven't gotten one that's good enough, but that's my experience with candles.
That's good. Good.
What about being out on the trail, either as a rest or when you're at camp and looking around you and looking at the night sky, or maybe it's daylight sky, depending on the season? What does that feel like?
Okay, when I'm out on the trail at night, it's one of my favorite times, because when I'm at home, I don't take the chance of running at night, because that's when you're going to poke your eyes out on branches or run into a moose that you don't see. When we used to live down the valley here, there was a little creek that had made a ravine, and a little short ravine. And my friend June Weinstock came to visit for dinner one night, and she came on her skis. And when she left, she went down the ravine just as a moose was crossing, and she tucked up and went under the moose because she couldn't go up on either side. And the moose just kept going after she went under it. That was pretty brave. I wouldn't try to do that with a dog sled, I don't think, but you have a brake on a dog sled. And you have an ice hook on the dog sled, too. I don't use the ice hook because, I mean, I use it now, but I don't trust it. My dogs are strong enough, if they all pull at the same time, they can pop the ice hook out of the snow. But when you're out in the night, it's so wonderful to see all the stars above. When I was going into Unalakleet, we were out on the trail at night, and the aurora came out, and it had pinks and reds, and my neck got tired from riding on the back, hanging on with my hands, and tilting my head back to watch the northern lights dance around on the snow. But it was worth it to do that. It was worth it to do any of this stuff. Nothing you do is valuable unless you have to put a little effort into it, and I have to put a lot of effort in it because I'm clumsy to start with, but I love going out with the dogs and seeing the country. You know when you're going uphill, you know when you're going downhill. You know you're on the summit, on the top. And I like to think I'm the first person there, but a lot of these trails are made by Native people that have been using them for hunting or getting their supplies for fish camps. Whatever, they're out there too. They've made the trails for the rest of us to enjoy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
This has been
Did
very good.
Did that add anything?
Yeah.
Again, I was mixed up again.
That's okay. Unless there's anything else you want to say, because you had said something at the beginning about the looking up at the sky.
Yeah.
And make sure we covered that.
That's all I said about now. Is that okay?
You guys have anything to say?
The dogs.
Well, and that's what I was thinking of. I wanted to end saying, well, this is probably my last trip out here. I'm really going to miss it. Let's have one good howl good night, guys. And then I'll start out, dogs, and then you join me. And then I'd go, howl! And then have the dogs. We have audio tape of the dogs howling. That would be a nice way to finish it.
Yeah.
Okay. Surely this would not howl with me. And there'd be a beautiful aurora. There'd be wolves howling, and she'd go in the tent. But she always had plenty of firewood. She'd saw twice as much wood as you ever needed. When we went to Minchumina, we left little neat little piles of wood, and I picked them up. She would be in front, and I'd pick them up and put them on my sled when we came back. We got back to the trucks. I had a whole truckload full of wood that she had sawed up.
Nice.
I would drag other wood in and saw it if it got colder, but I don't waste time sawing more than I need.
Yeah, unbelievable that you know exactly how much wood you need.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for doing this.
Well, I'm sorry I wasn't more prepared.
No, it's great. I think it came out pretty well.
Unless there's anything else you want to close with?
Not without repeating myself.
Okay.
No, you've covered a lot.
You've done great.
Yeah, this is good.